Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. How strong are Rick Perry's presidential prospects? Less than 2 weeks after he officially threw his hat into the ring, Perry landed firmly at the front of the GOP pack in yesterday's Gallup poll of Republicans and right-leaning independents. The governor and his strategist seem keen to tell the story of a balanced budget and new jobs created in Texas during the recession, and to remind voters in the Republican base of both his disdain for big government and his embrace of conservative Christian social values. Perry's critics, meanwhile, point to the state's struggle to improve public schools and to the preponderance of new jobs that pay minimum wage as evidence of flaws in his leadership. So what are Governor Perry's fans and detractors, not to mention national media, likely to pay most attention to in the months to come? William McKenzie is here. He's an editorial columnist for the Dallas Morning News. Bob Ray Sanders writes columns for the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. Bill and Bob Ray, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for coming back.
Great to be here.
So Governor Perry was clearly very smart to time his announcement the way he did. What, besides the novelty of his entrance into the race later in the game, do you think pushed him to the forefront?
Well, first of all, I think that the weakness of the overall field of Republican candidates, it's still at least obvious to me that Republicans don't like what they see. And even though Perry is different, he's coming from this large state of Texas. He has the jobs record, and we can debate whether or not it's his record. But he has that going for him. And I think he played it well. I mean, there are people who argue about whether he should have announced on the day of the Iowa, you know, straw poll and all of that. But I think he's been quite astute in the way he's rolled this out.
And I agree with Bob Ray. I think there's kind of it's been a weak field. And if you go back to late April, early May, there was a rollout and kind of a buildup for John Huntsman, the former Utah governor who was Obama's ambassador to China. And he looked like he was going to be a person who had gained some traction. And he kind of just went thud and really hasn't gained a whole lot of momentum since then. Romney has been running this front runner strategy, and so you know he wasn't going down. He wasn't really going up a whole lot, Romney, and so Perry, you know, saw that there was an opening there, and you know, to some extent, this reminds me of Clinton in '91. When George H.W. Bush was high in popularity ratings, no Democrats were thinking about running against him. They all started kind of backing out of the race. And Clinton stepped forward in September of that year. And, you know, people really didn't give him much of a chance. And he hit the seam at the right moment and rode it all the way to get the nomination. As we know, benefited from Perot helping him win the presidency. I'm not saying that's going to happen with Perry, but I can see the strategy. And I think it's a smart one in his point. He's waiting till kind of the end. He gets in, and the question is, will he hit the seam like Clinton?
So I'm curious because obviously Governor Perry has a lot of very powerful and wealthy friends and allies in the state. He also has a lot of very wealthy, powerful Republicans who are clearly not in his camp. What has he done to alienate the likes of Karl Rove and Karen Hughes?
Well, put them aside, I think what he has, and this is part of the untold story about Perry, I mean, he is not wildly popular in all parts of the business community. And the most recent example is there's been a push to try to get more professors to teach at our major flagship universities, which on the surface of it is not a bad thing.
At the expense of research.
Right. But, so the question is, Perry's has aligned himself with a movement that is trying to really push research professors to do more teaching. And a lot of folks in the business community have responded and said, wait a second, this research base is really fundamental to our economy. And there's a group that is formed of business folks who have pushed back against that. This all gets into Perry appointees to the boards of regents at UT and Texas A&M, and there's been a lot of concern among various business folks about the people he's put on there, you know, to the extent that they will push this agenda, as well as perhaps being Perry crony. So he is not well-loved among all parts of the business community. And the last example, and I'll be quiet here, during the last legislative session when there was a rainy day fund surplus of about $9 billion, there were a lot of business leaders who were pushing forward around the state to Perry to at least use some of that rainy day fund to offset the cuts to education. And he wouldn't budge. And they, you know, were really pushing Perry to do that. So I don't see him being just a universally well-loved person in the Texas business community.
And for whatever reason, there's bad blood between him and George W. And the Bush family in general. And I'm not sure what that is other than Perry not being, you know, overly, you know, enamored of this particular president, not quoting him, not seeking his advice, not wanting him around, and certainly moving further to the right than George Bush could ever get, I think. And so you have that faction of the Republican Party saying, wait a minute, you would think that any Republican running from Texas would want the ex-president to be part of his campaign, to part of his, you know, cabinet to help him get ready for this thing. And Perry has not asked for that, doesn't want that apparently, and wouldn't get it even if he did ask, I'm guessing. So you've got people there who's saying, wait a minute, this guy, and in fact, I think they're looking for somebody to run against him still. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. I know they've asked people if they would, hey, won't you consider getting in here? Because we really don't want Perry as the nominee.
I don't know what the dispute, if there is a dispute, and there appears there is, stems from. You know, what you read, at least, is that when Perry went out and was campaigning for Giuliani, he made comments about George W. not being a fiscal conservative, and that got a lot of play in the press. You know, and I think back when Bush was governor, I remember conversations with him where he would talk about Perry. I never detected any animosity. They were talking more issues they were working on as governor and lieutenant governor. So I've never picked that up in conversation. So I don't really know, you know, if there's a dispute, what it's about and what the source of it is. But clearly the Bush people are not leading the bandwagon for Perry.
Although depending on, you know, you may think that it's a great thing or a bad thing that you might associate those two. But outside the state of Texas, people see more similarities than differences between the two, don't you think?
Without a doubt. I mean, the sound, the mannerisms, you know,
West
just the
Texas
history.
Yeah,
that old attitude. And I got to wonder if that's going to be good or bad. I mean, obviously there are going to be some people who want to be reminded of George W. There are going to be other people who don't want to be reminded. In fact, Bill and I were talking earlier, you know, just a year ago, I mean, the consensus around the country and even in this state was that this country does not want another Texan and especially another Texas governor to be president anytime soon. And so within a year, it's changed.
Yeah.
But it's back to that right. Feel that's out
well,
there.
I think there is a difference between Bush and Perry. I concede, you know, on the style, mannerism, a lot of people, you know, in the Northeast or Midwest may see kind of the same person. But Perry has a harder-edged Republicanism than Bush did. I mean, Bush was at 99, was saying to Tom DeLay, you know, don't balance the budget on the backs of the poor. And that kind of, you know, got a lot of headlines when Bush said it when he was running in 99 before he even got, you know, traction in 2000. And he ran from the beginning on a compassionate conservatism, big tent Republicanism. So far, we haven't heard any of that from Perry. And so I think the more this campaign goes, unless Perry changes his tune, I think the differences are going to show up fairly quickly, you know, on the issue of education, which Bush embraced and made kind of his signature issue here and pushed it at the national level and going with No Child Left Behind, which represented the biggest expansion of federal aid to education since Lyndon Johnson. Perry is running dead set against that, you know. So there are going to be some very clear differences as this thing goes on.
Yeah, I mean, there are clear differences without a doubt. And Perry, in order to get the nomination, can't be similar to George Bush in that regard.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to deal with the immigration. Immigration was on his agenda. I mean, and had there not been 9/11, I think we probably would have an immigration bill in that administration. I mean, he was reaching out to Mexican leaders and talking about that. He certainly was not talking about building fences necessarily at the time. So there will be the differences. But I just wonder, once he gets the nomination, should he get the nomination, can he then parlay that into a wider appeal to the American people? And I don't know
right.
that one.
Well, and I would say right now the course he's running is going to make it really hard to do. And again, I think this is a difference between Perry and Bush. I think Bush was mindful of that broad center that you were talking about from the beginning. And Perry is in my book, he is running with a very small tent.
Right.
And the smaller he makes it, you know, the comments of that he, you know, made about Bernanke, And
calling
I'm not,
Bernanke treasonous for printing money.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And his courting of social conservatives, which to some extent is going to happen with any candidate in the Republican Party, but he has really courted them. And so the further he goes down that road, I think it gets a lot harder for him to come back in the general election.
And I think that's what the Karl Roves of the world are afraid of. Mm-hmm. You know, will you carve such a narrow segment out of this in order to get the nomination that you end up losing the general election?
Well, I have to ask you about this because you said the word tent now twice, and it makes me think of tent revivals. And there was a lot
Amen, sister.
Maybe we'll leave this to Bob Wright. There was a lot of hand-wringing before Governor Perry's prayer rally. A lot of people said, well, there's only 10,000 people signed up and no one's going to show up, and or 3,000, whatever it was. And at least if you look at the numbers of bottoms in seats, it was a resounding success. I'm wondering, though, what the long-term repercussions of that are. For example, there are staunch Republicans who are not Christian. Mm-hmm. Will they feel alienated by Governor Perry?
You know what? I know a lot of people, including Republicans, who were offended by that whole idea of this is a Christian thing, you know, and they want a leader to be a leader of all people, regardless of religion. What I think it's really going to hurt him more in that regard is if the same standard is held up to the Republican nominee as was for the Democratic nominee last time, religion and your association with certain people in religion will play a part in that. I mean, all the people who supported that prayer meeting, fast, whatever it was called, you know, there was no dinner on the ground because it was a fast. But and all the people who did that and their backgrounds, I mean, divisive in their very nature, I just think if they're examined well, that will turn off more of Americans, Republicans as well, than it will bring to the tent.
Yeah, so. And I agree with that. And you know, we're all thinking here about Jeremiah Wright, Barack Obama's pastor, before he got the nomination, having given that famous speech in Philadelphia, which he did a very good job at trying to explain his own views, Obama's own views, and put some distance with Reverend Wright. And I think the same way, and this is why I don't quite understand why he is running so hard with the social conservatives like this, because some of these folks, he's going to have to explain what the difference is between him and them, or, you know, explain their views. And I don't think that's a position I want to be in come about March or April of next year if you're getting the nomination.
But again, if you're running against Romney and Huntsman or whoever, and then you got that, and they're not saying it out loud yet, but that's really the undercurrent here, and I think has something to do with these latest numbers that you just quoted at the beginning of the show. They don't like Mormons. And that's
the distinction. They didn't like Catholics in 1960.
Oh, they didn't like Catholics in 1960. And again, I think, you know, Mitt Romney's tried to take it up on, you know, to the forefront, as John Kennedy did in 1960 with the Baptists here in Texas. But at the same time, he knows that there are a certain number of people in that narrow base who will be voting in the primary who will not vote for anyone who is a Mormon.
But I will say that the polling data shows that the discomfort about a Mormon being president runs across party lines. So it isn't just Republicans.
I agree.
And I think to some degree it's just a lack. A lot of people, you know, myself included, don't know a whole lot about what Mormonism is about. And so I think that's part of it. But it is a fascinating field when you think about it. You got two social conservatives, Perry Bachman, running against at least two Mormons, Huntsman and Romney, and so that's the way the field is shaping up. Is really it's interesting to watch.
Well, you know, it's really interesting to me that you're even talking about religion at this stage, and of course that's where you talk about it. But it's going to be talked about again. I mean, the precedent is set. So I think religion is going to play more of a part in this election than perhaps anyone since 1960.
My guests are Bob Ray Sanders of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram and William McKenzie of the Dallas Morning News. We are talking today about Texas Governor Rick Perry's presidential campaign. Join us by calling 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education. You can enrich your career with new certificate programs in web design, graphic design, and paralegal studies. Learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guests this hour are William McKenzie of the Dallas Morning News and Bob Ray Sanders of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. We're speaking about Texas Governor Rick Perry's presidential campaign. You're invited to join us by sending email to think@kera.org or by calling 1-800-933-5372. So if someone from the Perry campaign were here right now, they would say, let's stop talking about all this and let's talk about the economy in Texas, which is magnificent compared to other states. There are some nuances to that discussion, but there is no question that Texas is doing far better than other U.S. states. To what extent will the nuances get discussed by people outside of this state?
Well, hopefully all the media examination of Perry will bring some of those out. I mean, the first round blush of criticism was, well, they're all low-paying jobs. And that's not really it. Clearly, we have some low-paying jobs that are being created. But Richard Fisher, the head of the Dallas Fed, gave a speech in Midland last week where he pointed out that the job 68% of the jobs that have been created in Texas since the recession ended in 2009 have been in education, healthcare, business, professional services. And they are, you know, not our low-paying jobs. And, in fact, our median income is pretty good when it ranks up nationwide. The problem is our low-paying jobs are not exclusively, but they are certainly out on the farm, and that's in particularly in the valley where you're going to have immigrant labor working on farms. And so, you know, this drought, all the impact it's going to be having on our farm economy, which I think we're just starting to see, I think that's part of the picture, and that's going to hit people who are low-income workers. So, you know, I think it is wrong to say that this is just all about low-paying jobs, and I think that's a myth. And if I were in Perry's shoes, I'd probably say, look, you know, even if I'm creating low-income, low-paying jobs, what are your states doing, mm-hmm. you know?
No, that's his biggest and best argument right now. But at the same time, I think what the scrutiny is going to be is, number one, how much did he have to do with those jobs? And I think they're already beginning to look at, you know, what does a Texas governor do? I mean, Texas has one of the really
weakest
governors in the country in terms of what they're able to do. Now, he has his enterprise fund and all that, which mm-hmm. your paper bill has obviously looked into, and there are some issues there that we'll get to. And then just last month, the unemployment rate rose to 8.4%, the highest in 24 months. Of course, he blamed that on the policies of Obama, and that's fine. He can do that. But in addition to what kinds of jobs they are, it's going to be what did you do to bring those jobs here? The other thing is that just in the last two legislative sessions, what have you done to hurt? I mean, could there have been more jobs? And what about the people who, because of your policies, are out of work today, including teachers, including some other workers in this state? So it will be nuanced for sure, but that's strong. When the economy is going to be the number one issue, it won't be the wars that some people thought it might be maybe 2 years ago. It's going to be the economy. And as long as the economy is like this, as long as the unemployment rate is hovering above 9% nationwide, that's going to be an issue, and he's going to use it. That's the best thing he has going for him right now, aside from the mystique of Rick Perry not being one of the others.
Right. And I would say that, and I agree with Bob Ray, I mean, Perry's not the guy out there creating these jobs. And for that matter, neither is the president, the one who creates the jobs. But Perry, he's not the one doing it. I think he's probably had the good sense to kind of stay out of the way and keep taxes low and keep, you know, a lean regulatory climate here. And I think that has helped with the growth of jobs. And I think if I were in his shoes, that's probably the argument I'd make, you know, nationwide. The criticism of his been is that one way he has grown jobs here is he's gone to other states and tried to bring them in here. And, you know, you can't really do that if you're president. You know, you're the president of the whole nation. So you can't go rob X to bring in to Texas.
What about the governor has now been governor of Texas for longer than anyone else has had this job. We remain dead last in a lot of measures of educational achievement. How do you spin that and explain it to the country what's going on?
Well, but that, I don't think that's entirely true. I mean, our NAEP score, the National Assessment of Educational Progress, which is the gold standard of exams, has shown that our, and I'm going to blow the grades, I think it's our eighth graders in math and one other subjects are really, they're doing okay. Mm-hmm. And for big states, we're really doing okay. Is that Perry's doing? Not necessarily. But those scores show that we have some good things going on here. We also, back in 2009, the legislature really made a big push to have new standards that would get kids ready for college. And that was one of the first set of college-ready standards in the country. And we also have led the pack in trying to have accountability with consequences. So if kids are stuck in failing schools, you can try to do something about it. So I don't think our picture is all horrible. Clearly, we have a high dropout rate, and we have problems. It's a mixed bag.
Well, it is a mixed bag, but I think it's more negative than it is positive when you look at it from the big picture, including using the No Child Left Behind. I mean, we just got a report recently talking about the number of schools, individual schools and school districts that didn't meet it. I mean, and that's nationwide, too. But in Texas, you talk about not only the dropout rate, the graduation rate is low, the number of kids who do not make it, I mean, even with the old tax that's being phased out now, that testing. But just look at the amount of dollars per student being spent in Texas. And that's where I think it's really going to hurt. When you see that, you know, we've looked at Texas over the years, and instead of gaining in number of dollars, and I know you can't buy your way out of, you know, bad test scores, but instead of raising dollars, we're cutting dollars. You know, our kids are suffering here. I mean, we have a bad educational system, and there are a lot of kids being left behind. That will come out, and when you go to certain school districts and in certain cities, that plays out even more so. And that's what television will be able to show. That's what when the national spotlight really gets shown on Texas, you're going to see some horrible stories. And if you're any kind of PR person at all, or one of those guys that they're fronting, I'm sure they've already got the commercials already made for that one.
Right. But here's the thing. I can point to a couple of areas where I think Perry made a difference on education. I think it's going to be much harder for him to go run as an education governor. Early in his administration, he pushed for an early math program, was modeled on what Bush had for early reading program. That was good. Later in 2009, he stood up to members of his own party and also Democrats who were trying to weaken the ban on social promotion, which basically is kids in third, fifth, and eighth grade. We had a prohibition against them going up to the next grade if they weren't ready for that grade. And he stood up and said, no, we're not going to weaken that ban. And they reached a compromise. Those are really the only areas I can tell you that Rick Perry has made a big difference himself. He's followed the parade. And I think if I have anything, that is my real problem with Perry running as a leader of the country, is he's been more of a follower on issues than he has been a leader. And with the exception of the Texas, the TTC, I'm thinking Trans-Texas Corridor, mm-hmm. You know, I can't think of a huge Rick Perry signature issue.
And that's a negative. I mean, particularly
Correct.
All those rural people who thought it was a land grab and you're giving money to a foreign company, of which we could say about all these toll roads that are coming in almost, that's a negative. I mean, you know, he's taking care of his buddies in the minds of many people who've been giving money to his campaigns. That's, you know, he's got an answer to that.
Right.
Although, in how many primary elections do we sit here as voters and say, I just can't decide because there are five awesome people that I would like to choose from? I mean, don't we say this every 4 years that, well, we're going to have to choose the least bad of, and he is ahead right now.
He is ahead, and it's going to be interesting to see if indeed one other person gets in this race and how that would change the dynamics. But again, you're talking about he's even ahead in Iowa right now as well, but by a little bit, I think, over Bachmann. But that's going to be the first test. Now, he hasn't considered that the ultimate test because he spent a lot of his time in New Hampshire and South Carolina, and he thinks that will carry him through even if he doesn't win Iowa. You got to do that first. I mean, you got to take it step by step. So he is ahead. But I guarantee you, we're going to see a lot more about Rick Perry. These numbers, I don't think, will stand. Now, maybe, mm-hmm. and I don't underestimate him. I mean, I underestimated George Bush. I didn't think he would be governor of Texas. So that tells you how wrong I was, right? I don't underestimate him. And I don't underestimate or overestimate the intelligence of the American people, frankly. I mean, if the economy is so bad that they want anybody but Obama and Perry is it, that's who they're going to go for. But I just don't think that by the time we get to general election next year, that it's going to be we want anybody but Obama. We want the best person who can lead this country. And that's what the voters will be deciding. Maybe I'm hoping more than really thinking this, but that's what I'm hoping.
We've got folks champing at the bit on the phone lines here. 1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go first to Louisville. We have Brett on the line. Hey, Brett.
Hey, Chris. Great show. I'm glad you guys are there. I have to admit, when I heard Rick Perry was running, I said, thank God and good riddance. And I'm wondering if – I'm really curious about your opinion if – and it sounds like you kind of already answered it – if it's a mistake for him to run. Because in Texas, he really didn't have to debate anybody. And really, aside from, some of the things that I've seen in the newspaper, there's very little coverage of what he actually did. And I think once the spotlight is on him, it'll be an ugly picture. So I guess I'd just like to hear a little bit more on that. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, from Perry's vantage point, I wouldn't say it's a mistake. I mean, he's if we said at the outset, he's waiting for this moment, and he's hit it. I'm not in the business of telling candidates whether they should run or not. So I don't, I don't know whether it's a mistake if he runs for president or not. I think he has a he's going to have a hard case to make when it gets right down to it.
Well, think back to when he was back in Giuliani. I mean, he actually thought, and I think there were people who thought that had Giuliani got the nomination, and you talk about a bad candidate all over, but Perry was going to be the vice presidential nominee, I think, or at least that's what he was thinking of. So he sat this in mind for a while. What I find interesting, already they're thinking, or some people are thinking, that should he become the nominee, who can we get on the ticket with him to make it better than what it would be with just Perry there? And so you're already hearing names of who can we get with him to make him a stronger candidate and more attractive to people outside of that narrow base that we've been talking about.
And if we're going to continue talking about the Bush-Perry thing, clearly there were people had doubts as to whether Bush was going to be up for the job when he was running. But there was an element of goodwill built up around him, and there was a receptivity among a lot of Republicans that they kind of wanted this to be the guy. Remember, everybody's going down to Austin to kind of meet with him, and he was getting in the race with some momentum, some goodwill behind him. I don't see that same thing with Perry. I see more anger behind Perry.
But what I also saw with George Bush was that his handlers got him on message. Here are three things that you're going to talk about, and this is all you're going to talk about, and we're going to carry this all the way through to the nomination. I don't sense that's happened with Perry. I mean, he's made too many missteps already in the first few weeks, but whether it can happen over the next couple of months, we'll see.
And Bob Ray and I were talking about this earlier. I mean, the question is, will his Texanishness, if that's a word, how will that sell outside of here? We're used to it. We're Texans. We kind of know it. But, will that sell well? Because I think he has a raw brand of it, if I can use that, when he goes out and sells himself. And I will say, though, and we talked about this, too, I mean, this guy is a really good campaigner. And if I were in an Obama camp, I would be taking him very seriously if he starts looking like he's going to get the nomination, because I think he'll be the toughest guy they've ever run against.
And frankly, until 2 weeks before, I think his announcement, Obama people hadn't really considered him as a serious candidate or that he would get in.
Right.
And they're behind the eight ball right now and catching up. But they got time to do that.
What do we know about his advisory team?
Well, he has people. Ray Sullivan worked for Bush for a while. He's his chief of staff. Ray's worked for Sam Johnson at one point, congressman from here. He's a conservative who's had a lot of experience. He's involved. Dave Carney is his big guru, who is from New Hampshire. He's kind of his Karl Rove. To my knowledge, Carney has not had a presidential candidate that he's masterminded, but he's been around national politics for a good while. Worked in Washington in the 80s and knew of him then, so he's been around. Mark Miner's his press person. Mark is a likable guy, but he can go on the attack pretty well when he wants to. So
And I think he's been getting people, aside from just the national scope, in place in some of these early primaries. And I noticed that the new, and I can't think of her name now, but our new insurance commissioner who comes from South Carolina and has contacts with the governor there and the Republican establishment there, I think that was done intentionally to make that connection. So I see some brilliance in some of the campaign strategies so far. I mean, and saying brilliance and Perry in the same breath, I know that's a lot for a lot of people to take, but
it's a lot for you anyway.
I say a lot for me to take.
Well, but, I think here's where I think he's brilliant. I think he's a brilliant campaigner.
I agree with you. Right. I agree with you. I mean, Kate Bailey underestimated him. Of course, she ran a terrible campaign as well, but she certainly underestimated him. And as I said, right. I'm not about to try to underestimate the ability of Rick Perry to run a good campaign.
Right. 1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Gary in Fort Worth. Hi, Gary.
Hello, Chris. Good show.
Thank you.
I've been a member of the Republican Party since 1968, and at meetings that I've attended in the last couple of years, the extreme right-wing religious conservative tilt has been quite a concern because we're going off the deep end to the right wing. But a few weeks ago at a Republican Party meeting, a lady there told me that since I was a Jew, I needed to convert and get on the right side of the party. And I was just curious what Bob Ray, what his thought about that is, because, gee whiz, you know, are we getting to the Shiites versus the Sunnis in this country?
Well, I will speak to that. Sadly, I think we are to a degree, at least that's where some people would like us to go. When you consider a lot of the people and a lot of the conservative religious right are people who are, quote, pro-Israel, quotes, right? Not pro-Jew, but pro-Israel. And part of that thinking is, and they will correct me if I'm wrong on this, but part of that thinking is they're pro-Israel because, you know, their Bible tells them that, you know, they got to care about Israel and they got to get those Jews converted. Now, a lot of Jews in Israel will say, okay, well, we'll deal with it as long as they do our fighting for us politically in Washington. We'll handle that and we understand where they're coming from. But I think that's very, very demeaning. And I don't see, I mean, I noticed that Glenn Beck, of all people, was over in Israel yesterday, I think it was, preaching. And it turns my stomach the way they treat people. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's Sunni and Shiite, but it's getting close.
Bob Ray Sanders is here from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, along with William McKenzie of the Dallas Morning News. We'll resume our discussion of Governor Rick Perry's presidential campaign after the break. You can get to us by sending email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education. You can enrich your career with new certificate programs in web design, graphic design, and paralegal studies. Learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour about Governor Rick Perry's presidential campaign with Bob Ray Sanders of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram and William McKenzie of the Dallas Morning News. Our number is 1-800-933-5372. So let's talk about the occasional secession palaver. Is that something that delights people outside the state of Texas and makes them sort of giggle? Or do people think, wait a second, what kind of person is this?
Well, I think Bob Ray touched on this earlier, and he's exactly right. There's things like this Perry's going to have to explain. Now, having said that, I think probably with some Republican voters who in some primary states, they may like the bravado, and they may like the kind of like this guy. But I think by and large, most people will think, what are you talking about?
Yeah, when you're talking about saying, I mean, even jokingly, and I think he really was joking at the time that he said the secession thing, at least. Not necessarily the states' rights and 10th Amendment thing, which is another whole issue. But we talk about secession. Why would you want to be president? And this is in the minds of some people around the country. Why would you want to be president of a country you don't want to belong to anymore? And that's going to come back to haunt him in more ways than one, I think. It's also going to come back in this way, particularly if it gets to a general election question. When you talk about secession, it takes you all the way back. I mean, that whole states' rights thing, for me as a black person growing up in the South, I mean, the George Wallace is standing in the doorway of the institution. So, I mean, when you talk about states' rights, what states' right do you really want? And that is to run things the way I want to and to keep people out that I don't want in. And frankly, it goes all the way back to the arguments made in slavery. So that's a bad one, and he's going to have to deal with that. Now, frankly, I haven't read his book. But I got a feeling there are many things, just from the few things that I've heard people ask him about lately over the last 2 weeks. There are a lot of things in that book he's going to want to run away from, particularly once he gets to a general election, if he gets there.
And I would say on the succession comment, it came way before he was thinking about running for president, or at least the talk was. So I think it was more – but it showed how adept Perry is at getting ahead of a movement. I think he knew exactly what he was doing, and I think he was going as far as he could out on a limb without saying, I want to succeed. And I don't think he wants to succeed. I don't think in 1,000 years. But he knew he was playing to a certain audience that was just then developing the Tea Party, because this was April of 2009, I think it was.
Yeah.
And it was just right around tax time. And he knew exactly what he was doing. He was pushing a button to, you know, ignite a response. He gets the response. It's in his favor, and he's able to use that. And this is where I'm thinking, if this guy gets the nomination, or forget that, if you're Mitt Romney and you're looking to size this guy up, this guy is really a very good campaigner. I'm not saying good necessarily in a right, wrong way. He's very good at what he does. And I don't know if this has been your experience. Mine has been with him. Yes, he can talk about issues. Some think that he can't talk about issues. But what really animates him is winning.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And again, and I think you're right that he picked Washington as the enemy. And if he could run against Washington, it will be all right. And this is the time that's the whole Tea Party movement thing. It's too much government in our lives. And his first statement was, I want to make sure that I can get government out of your lives, or as much government as I can out of your lives. Well,
that seems as if it would make it really hard to work with Congress if he were to, in fact, win the general election.
Oh, I mean, I don't think he's thinking about working with Congress right now. I mean, I think what their hope is that if they really do things the way they want to do it, you're going to have a Republican president, a Republican House, and a Republican Senate, and they're just going to have a great time just changing the world and doing away with big government and all of that.
But you remember when he was running against Kay Bailey in the primary here, and he was arguing running against Washington, a lot of the congressional Republicans, they were dead set against Perry, or didn't like Perry. They kept saying, look, you know, you're running against us. We're the ones up here in Congress, you know?
I don't know what kind of relationship that would be. And as Bill said earlier, or you, that, you know, he's been a follower more than a leader. I mean, when I think about the legislature over his terms as governor, as long as he's been governor, I didn't see the leadership on most issues. I mean, I saw him standing in the wings, and maybe he was doing it behind the scenes and I just didn't know about it. But, I mean, I just saw him as somebody just waiting on something to happen. I mean, he would say what he wouldn't go for or what he might veto if something passed, but he wasn't pushing legislation.
Right. No, you're right. He had a school finance proposal that he put forward in the middle of a big school finance debate, and I forgot this was in the middle part of the last decade, and it lost something like 147-0 in the House, and the House is controlled by Republicans. So, you know, he was not leading the parade all the time.
Right. So
let's go back to the phones now, 1-800-933-5372. We have Jeff on the line in Dallas. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thank you.
Well, I'll just so you know, I have been a Democrat my entire life. The last time I was a Republican was when I was in high school in 1966, and I supported Bo Calloway for governor of Georgia over the segregationist Lester Maddox.
Wow.
So, yeah. That, you know, that just tells you that, you know, where I am. But my problem with all of this is that I think that Obama was elected to implement a progressive agenda. He compromised with the Republicans and watered it down, and the Republicans have successfully labeled this progressive/liberal/socialist agenda now as a complete failure because it didn't work because it was watered down. And the Democrats historically have not had the taste for blood to really go after the opposing candidates. And I'm concerned that Rick Perry's going to be, I'm the jobs guy, I'm the jobs guy, I'm the jobs guy from now until the election, and by the time the Democrats get around to talking about that, everybody is going to have that beaten in their head as propaganda, and they're just going to believe it.
Well, I mean, there's certainly some truth to what you just said. Certainly there are progressives out there who are upset that the Obama administration and Obama himself didn't fight harder on some of the issues that he claimed he wanted and that he compromised too much, including in this latest battle over the debt ceiling and a lot of other things and over the Bush tax cuts. I mean, last December, I think it was. But here's where I think the administration is seeing it, and maybe he's taking people for granted or whatever, is that when it comes down to it, you've got Obama and you've got Rick Perry or Bachman or Mitt Romney. Where are you going to go, progressives? Stay home?
Well, but I'd also argue, where do moderates go in that election? Because I would disagree with our caller. I can understand from a progressive standpoint they would like Obama to be more in their camp sometimes, but which I would argue he has been on a number of occasions, the health care bill being one example and the stimulus bill when he first came in, which was loaded up with public works projects that have been sitting on the shelves and been on the laundry list that a lot of liberals in the House had wanted to get in play for a long period of time. There are others who are arguing, go with a deep tax Scott, don't go with that. Anyway, I think you can make the argument he's given a lot of things to the liberals in his party. However, if he wants to be reelected, which I think they probably Democrats would rather have that than not, he's got to play more to the center-right voter because the country historically is more center-right than it is center-left. And I think on this debt thing, I think Obama made a real mistake not getting out in front of it when his own debt commission gave him a roadmap in December of last year, and he was late to the game. I think he ended up in a good place in this debate with this grand bargain of deep spending cuts and entitlements and some sort of tax reform that leads to greater tax revenues. But he was late, and he didn't, you know— He was marginalized.
I agree. And that certainly lost him some independent support as well, in addition to that progressive support. But it also, I mean, Rick Perry, the same way I just said about, you know, where do people go when they don't get their kind of candidate as a nominee? I think Rick Perry is betting on the fact that, hey, wait a minute, all you moderate Republicans out there, all you people who say you don't want me and all you who love George Bush but you can't stand me.
If it's Perry versus Obama, they pick Perry.
Yeah, I mean, where do you go? I mean, you're not going to stay home this time. You know, everybody didn't like John McCain. I guarantee you those conservatives didn't like John McCain, didn't think he was conservative enough. But the idea was, okay, so what do? If you don't like me, do you just stay home? And, of course, some will, but most won't.
We know that Governor Perry is an excellent campaigner. You guys have both mentioned it. Does he have the ability to inspire people in the way that we seem to need in this country in order to elect a president in modern times?
What? I think my short answer is not necessarily. I think what he has is he has a ability to tap into anger. Some people may think that's inspirational because that's leading them to give voice to their anger and they're able to go out and march with their anger. And to some extent, you know, that's always been a part of our politics. You know, does he have that ability to present a grand picture of America where we're going to come together and go forward? Well, you know, the way he's running right now, you're going to have to be pretty conservative to buy into that.
And again, I don't know what the right word is. Inspire is not it. But what he does have, and I think we saw it a little bit at that prayer meeting, he has the ability to tap into that religious fervor that touches something in some people. It's the fire and brimstone, and by God, you know, the pounding on the pulpit, and here I am, and I can lead you. All you have to do is follow, as you know, because we're following Jesus anyway. So you follow me, I'm following Jesus, and we'll all get there, and it's all going to be all right. So I don't know if that's inspiration or just, you know, hallelujah, good time, we can do this together. But he has that, and I give him that.
And he also has presence, and we were talking about this earlier, too. You know, people may laugh about him having good hair, but he does. I mean, he's a handsome man. He is. His body language when he's, you know, in small crowds is good. He puts his arms around people. You know, he's not standoffish. He's, you know, he's kind of buddy-buddy in that regard. Way.
Looks good on a haystack.
Yeah. So, you know, he has a personal chemistry that I can see relating to some – getting some voters to feel like, yeah, this is really the guy I want.
But when you get to those big northeastern states and those states in the West, does that appeal? I mean, I don't know. I honestly don't know. I mean, I think it might to some, but I think that same thing that appeals to a few will turn off a lot. And that's what he has. And his people will be working with him over the months to try to figure that out. You know?
Yeah. But here we are. We're talking about Rick Perry, and we're not talking about Mitt Romney. You know, the interesting part is that, you know, Perry is he's dominated the conversation at least now, and Romney is being marginalized.
Yeah. And part of this is Romney's fault. I mean, he's dull. I think he misplayed it. He stayed out of Iowa because he didn't think he could win it. Number one, but he didn't want to spend the money for it. He tried to stay above the fray. He tried to focus on Obama and not anybody else in the campaign. And frankly, the way this one is going, you cannot ignore the other candidates in that primary.
Setting aside people's personal politics, is there evidence from recent history that Texas has something to gain from having a president from their home state in the White House?
Other than prestige?
Other than prestige. Well, I mean, there's Texans appointed to positions of importance.
I think it is. And if you think about editorial boards, which Rick Perry doesn't come to anymore, When you think about it, often they will support their home candidate because they think it does bring something. I mean, when you talk about in this area, the amount of money that is spent in Washington, I mean, there was a time when Tarrant County, for example, had more federal money than any county because Jim Wright was there. Or when LBJ was in office, the amount of money that came through Texas. Now, we call ourselves, you know, cutting out pork and all of that. But the truth is, more money flows to the state where there is
I don't think Bush really did that as much. I mean, the Trinity River Bridge, big example. I think he, if I'm not mistaken, he opposed it, you know, when it was coming through here. But to your point, yeah, I think there's prestige. We've now had three presidents from Texas, you know, and if Perry is the fourth, then that's fourth. And I've looked into this before, and I forget the number, but, you know, we're right, going to be right up there with Virginia and all those states we learned about as kids, the number. And I should know this top of my head. We've had more presidents elected from Texas the last 50 years, I think, than any state. And you're right, more than that, there people get appointed to office, you know, and you develop kind of a leadership class that way. And yeah, there is that element to it.
Well, it's exciting for Texans. So whether you like the candidate or not, you're certainly paying more attention to it. I mean, we're certainly devoting more space in the newspapers to it than we would otherwise, because he's a governor. And regardless, that person who says, we're going to get rid of him, if he doesn't win, he's still going to be governor. He doesn't have to resign.
Right. The interesting one about this has been a bolt out of the blue. And we talk, you know, Bush had the walk up. From about 98 through 2000, there was a lot of talk about him running, or through late 99. Perry, you know, it's really kind of caught on this summer. And then, whoosh. And I think one reason there's so much intense interest in him is that people, you know, didn't have that walk-up time to really examine who he is, you know, people outside of Texas, that is. And now everybody's thinking, who's Rick Perry?
I think that question will be asked for a long time to come. I mean, for a long time, meaning in the course of this campaign. Certainly by the time of December, the nation will have a better idea of who he is. And it's going to be interesting to see whether they really like or if he turns out to be what they thought he was in the beginning.
My guests this hour have been Bob Ray Sanders, who writes for the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, and William McKenzie of the Dallas Morning News. Guys, it's always a pleasure. Come back anytime.
Thank you.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.
Think production team includes engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.